my shatter. On the road, we could run much faster. To the left feet, dance is a disaster. If feelings really matter, I'm watching, watching the glass shatter. On the road, we could run much faster. To the left feet, dance is a disaster. It's hard to master. Forgive me, I'm a tragic actor. I'll leave, but you are what I'm at. You take me for a ride.
Practice in relationship mediation and conflict coaching. Relationship mediation is like feng shui for your relationships. For more information, visit me on the web at www.123untangled.com. You've just been listening to Payang Threadgill singing My Left Foot, an original piece from her second release, Portholes to a Love and Other Short Stories. If you're on the website, you will see there on the Blog Talk Radio website a link to her prior release called Of the Air. It's available there through Amazon.com. This release, Portholes to a Love and Other Short Stories that I'm playing from today, is available on iTunes. Payang is one of my favorite singers and songwriters, and the album is all original music. She's one of the more original songwriters out there, as you're hearing from listening to her music and as you'll hear further on in the show. She's based right here in Brooklyn, here in New York, and later I'll let you know about when you can hear her sing live, an experience that you really don't want to miss. It's something that I've had the pleasure of hearing, and I assure you that you would have a great time if you went to see her live. We've reached a milestone in the show's history. This is our fifth show, and I'm so excited about how the show's direction is developing and evolving. I started the show because as a mediator, I met so many people who started out in mediation feeling very apprehensive and skeptical about the process and ended the process feeling transformed. I think I wouldn't be overstating it to say that in many ways, regarding approaches to conflict, people can come out of mediation with a transformed understanding of how to negotiate disputes. So even if they didn't come to a common agreement about the issues, they found that the process itself was an outstanding experience. And I wondered about how to bring that feeling to folks who haven't taken the plunge and given mediation a try for themselves, because this is something you can't know until you've tried it yourself. All the books and websites in the world are not the same as experiencing it for yourself. And I wanted as many people as possible to experience conflict coaching and mediation beyond just reading about it. But I also want to be sure that the show is worth the time that you're taking to listen. I know that there are a lot of other things that you could be doing. It's Sunday afternoon. It's a wonderfully rainy Sunday afternoon here in New York City, so it's a great day to be sitting inside, I would say gathered around the radio, but you're gathered around your computer listening to the show. But it is important to me that you find value in taking time to listen and participating in the show, and that's a key point here. Participation on the air and in the chat room. We have this fantastic platform for a conversation about how to become better communicators and how to work through conflict in our relationships. But it is only as good as the input that comes from everyone, including you, my listeners. So I want to be sure that each week, by the end of this show, you feel better prepared to face the week ahead of you, knowing that whatever conflict arises, you have tools that you can use to address that conflict with skill and confidence and optimism. And that's what this show is about, making you the best communicator and conflict resolver you can be, and providing you with tools to deal with the various areas of conflict that arise in your life. This is a time for us to come together and learn from each other, counsel each other, work with each other to understand each other. Because it does take a village, not only to raise a child, but it takes a community to resolve the issues that arise within it. Now, many of you know that I was born in South Africa. And in South Africa, there's this concept called Ibanza. So you're going to learn a little Zulu today, okay? Ibanza. And an Ibanza is a community gathering where people come together to talk through issues that concern the community. It is a mediation process of sorts, a problem-solving process. You know, I was in South Africa in 1995, the year after Nelson Mandela was elected president, and I got to see Ibanza in action. You know how it is when there's a large group of people and there's a speaker who's trying to get everyone's attention, but no one is really paying attention. The speaker sounds so helpless, you know, "Hey, everybody, can I have your attention, please? Hey, everybody." And everybody's thinking, "Oh, that poor sap, I'm glad it isn't me." Well, in South Africa, I saw them do something that really worked, and I'd like to try it here so that you can understand how it helped to bring people together. What it is that they had everyone do this chant. And it's a call and response kind of thing, sort of like in church where the pastor or the chorister calls out something and the congregation answers back. And that is how these meetings would start. And the meeting that I saw was actually a rally. You know, it was a protest. Because, you know, we sure know how to protest in South Africa. I know that there are folks who are listening in South Africa right now, and we have mastered the fine art of a good protest in South Africa. So if you haven't seen a protest in South Africa, you're really missing out. You've got to see one. And here we were. It was a mid-morning in a big grassy area in front of City Hall. There was this huge crowd of people that had gathered to protest because they were angry with the mayor. The sun was shining brightly, and the crowd had just finished marching up the main road to City Hall, and now the march organizers needed to address the crowd. So one of them got on the microphone, and he started this chant. He said, "Akhlalin pansu bambim tetwa." And the crowd responded. They said, "Akhlalin pansu bambim tetwa." And the leader said it again. "Akhlalin pansu bambim tetwa." And the crowd responded, "Akhlalin pansu bambim tetwa." And it was powerful because you had a group of hundreds of people who were all in unison shouting back and forth with the leader, "Akhlalin pansu bambim tetwa." And not only did the crowd start to pay attention, but they started to pay attention as a people of one mind. And you know how it is when you do things in a group? You know, this is a key point in understanding communication. We human beings are all connected. And it may sound to you like, to some of you, like, I'm going to start spitting forth some new age mumbo jumbo. But the truth is, even neuroscience is just beginning to understand just how interconnected we are on a neurological level. And you've experienced it. Think of the last party you went to where there was dancing. And think of how different things were when everyone was kind of doing their own thing on the one hand. And then what happened when the DJ started playing the electric shuffle. And everybody got together on the dance floor and you were all doing the same thing in unison. The powerful thing, isn't it? When you get a whole group of people together acting in unison. Any sports team you see is an example of this. In the choir that sings in church, and the orchestra, and the opera, human beings are pack animals, my friends. We are not meant to be alone. And so it is that I want to bring us together and capture that power of community as we talk about conflict and communication. And I think we can learn something from how the leaders of the protest called the people together, not just by talking to them, but by involving them in the chant. "Akhlalin pansu bambim tetwa." Now, I'm sure that most of you are thinking, if you're not Zulu speaking, you're not listening from South Africa or otherwise, you know, understanding Zulu, you're thinking, well, okay, that's cool, but what the heck does it mean? So we're going to break it down. Not only are you going to learn something about communication today, you're going to learn some Zulu. And this is really important. You know, if you want a travel experience that is really fantastic, wherever you go, try to learn a little bit of the language. And in South Africa, there are 11 official languages to choose from. So you got a lot of choice there. If you travel to South Africa, and I really encourage you to go, you've got 11 official languages to choose from. And people love it when you try to speak in their language. They know you're going to mangle it. That's not the issue. The issue is that you've tried and that you said, you know, I respect your tribe and I'm going to try to be part of you for just a little while so that I'm here. You know, community is so important. Okay, so let's talk about what does the chant mean? The first phrase is "Akhlalin pansu," okay? So, and listen, I'm going to have to say something here again for my listeners in South Africa and everybody who's Zulu speaking. I was born in South Africa, but I grew up here in the United States, speaking English. So I know my accent is all over the place, and we're going to talk about why that's important in just a second. But the first phrase in my Americanized Zulu is "Akhlalin pansu," and it means to sit down. "Ukhlala" is to sit down. So if you hear somebody in South Africa say "Akhlala pansu," you better sit down. That's what it means, sit down. The third phrase, I'm going to skip the second phrase for a second, but the third phrase is "imtetwa." "Umtetwa." So "umtetwa" is to speak, to say something. It's the word. Okay? So what's the word? "Umtetwa." And then there's the second phrase, and I saved it for last for a reason. You see, Zulu is a tonal language, sort of like Chinese. And if you say something one way, it means one thing, but the same word with a different tone can mean something altogether different. And so it is with the middle phrase, "Ubamba." Now, people in South Africa are either rubbing their chins, faintly going, "Yes, yes, my sister, you've got it right." Or they're rolling around on the floor laughing their heads off. Because the word "Ubamba" could mean to grasp, as in to understand, or if you say it a different way, it's a slang term for nookie. And I have no idea which one I'm saying right now. So I'm either telling you all, let's get together and understand what's being said, or I'm saying, let's all get together for some nookie. Either way, we'd be communicating, right? I mean, that's what it means to make love, not war, right? So I certainly hope I'm not saying let's get together and have an orgy. I'm hoping somebody can call in and clear it up and let me know if my pronunciation is one way or the other. But whatever the case is, the chant, the power of the chant is that we're telling everybody, hey, let's all sit down together and understand each other. Let's put aside rancor and animosity and rudeness for the sake of shock value. We've had enough verbal violence in our community. Instead, let's sit down together and reason together. And now you can also tell all of your friends that you also speak some Zulu, right? Very good. Okay, so we have a lot more for you on the show today. We'll be starting out each show chatting a bit about interesting conflict and communication issues that have come up during the week. And then in each show going forward, we're going to tackle the topic of the week. This week, our topic is negotiating with power, how to use the tools of collaborative self-advocacy to ask for something that you need from someone who has more power than you. Next week, we'll welcome our first guest to the show. You know, tax season is upon us, and that has many people thinking about money, which is one of the top issues that leads marriages to end in divorce. So Dominic Rees, a financial advisor and financial educator, will join us to talk about how to manage your money. That's next week's topic. But this week, we're going to talk about negotiating with power. After the topic of the week, we're going to talk about the question of the week. And this is when I invite you to share your opinions and expertise regarding a particular issue. And this week, we'll tackle the issue of getting involved when two friends or partners, especially if they're married or in a long-term relationship, when they're having a fight, should you get involved? And it's also a chance for you, as members of the Entangled community, to share your issues and concerns and get free conflict coaching from me. And this gives you a chance to get professional input into your concerns and also gives you a chance to try out conflict coaching and mediation and see how it works. So that is how the show will go for now. It's developing and evolving, and I love your input on what you'd like to hear on the show and what you'd like to see changed even. So get in touch with me at info@123untangled.com for email, or contact me through my website, www.123untangled.com. All right, we're going to take a break and hear more from our featured artist this week, Payeng Threadgill. After the break, we'll talk about the topic of the day, negotiating with power. The song you're about to hear is called Mining for Sapphires, and it is from her second album, Portholes to a Love and Other Short Stories. Ladies and gentlemen, Payeng Threadgill.
Some people feel it through a lens or the picture they'll take. Some people feel themselves move, others feel shame.
If you're just joining us, I am broadcasting live from Harlem, USA. This is Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer, and I'm your host for today. We're here ready to talk about the topic of the day. You've just been listening to Pyne Threadgill, and the song was called Mining for Sapphires, and we're going to be hearing more from her later on in the show. I wanted to address a technical issue right now on the show. If there are any issues with the sound, I heard from somebody that there was an issue with sound, join into the chat room and let us know. And we have a caller from the 202 area code. I'm glad that you're back on the line. I was actually going to address that. And I'm going to go ahead and take the call and see what's going on. All right? So, caller, you're on the air. Who am I talking to?
Me?
Hello?
Are you talking about me?
Yes, I'm talking about you.
Hi, it's Dina.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Let me take you off speakerphone.
Okay.
Wonderful. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you so much for joining on the show.
Of course. You always have such great advice. I figured I'd come and listen to what you have to say.
Well, thank you. Welcome. Please go ahead with your comment for today.
I didn't have any comments. I didn't know I pressed one. I was just listening. I'm passively listening today.
Oh, well, thank you for letting me know that you're here. And I always welcome anybody who's calling, even if it's just to say hey. All righty. So I'm going to put you back on hold. I welcome anybody to call in and say hello, or as we talk about the topic of the day or the question of the day, to go ahead and call in with your opinions, because that's what makes this show work, is when you call in and give us your input. So we're going to talk about the topic of the day, and the topic of the day is about negotiating with power. You know, you might find yourself in a situation where you need to ask someone for help with something, or you need to ask them to do something, and this is the person who's more powerful than you are. And this is something that often happens in the workplace, where there is a hierarchy. And most workplaces are set up that way. That's how things are arranged. And so in a hierarchy, when you have a problem and you need to go to someone higher up in the organization to deal with it, you know, it can be a really challenging, kind of daunting thing. Many a sleepless night has come from situations like that. And believe me, I understand that. So today I want to share with you some information that can make the situation easier for you. And this information allows you to use the power of negotiation and mediation to work to your advantage when you're dealing with someone who has more power than you. And the first thing I suggest is that you understand something about the psychology of power and position. And the first thing to understand is that people in power are just that. They are people. They are as human as you or me. Nothing makes them particularly special. They haven't suddenly become supernatural because now they have a certain position. And the problem is confusing the power of the position or the office with the power of the person. Not everyone is equally confident with power. And the responsibility and the accountability that come with power can be overwhelming, daunting, frightening, in fact. Sometimes supervisors or others who occupy a higher place in the hierarchy than you do overcompensate for their sense of fear and inadequacy by being rough or controlling or unpleasant or unkind. Here's something I often tell my conflict coaching clients: happy dogs don't bite. Dogs bite when they feel threatened. So a person who is comfortable with his or her position has no incentive to be belittling or dismissive or mean or vindictive. These are the people about whom others say, she's so approachable, the people who are comfortable in their position of power. They're approachable, or he is so down to earth. And if you're working with someone like that, then you probably don't have an issue approaching that person with a problem. But when you're working with someone that you find difficult to approach, it can help to understand that their actions might be the way that they manifest frustration or discomfort with the tasks that they face. And if you need to approach them about something, your goal is to avoid becoming another one of those tasks. You don't want to be the problem. You want their help resolving a problem. If you've been listening to the show, you already have the basics from a communication perspective. You know how to listen to be heard by listening for positions, interests, and needs. You know about paraphrasing and reframing, and that works in this situation too. You know about separating intent from impact when you present an issue, and you know how to discover your own PIN, your own positions, interests, and needs. And by the way, you'll probably be pleased to hear that I'm putting all of this together in a book so that you don't have to go back through all the shows to get this information, although I don't mind if you do. The more listeners I have, the more likely the show will get picked up and reach an even wider audience. So do listen and invite others to listen as well, even if it's to the archive versions of the show. All this information is in there laid out for you. But then I'm also going to put it together in a book so that it's easy for you to access. So now that you have those basics, how do you put them into practice when you must negotiate with power? So here are my four suggestions. Okay, I'm going to distill this down to four parts. First, be prepared. Do your homework. Get your facts straight. Know your PIN, your position's interests and needs, and try to anticipate your supervisor's PIN. And then practice. Get a friend to help you practice if you can. Otherwise, a mirror will do, really. And it's okay. You shouldn't feel weird talking to yourself. I do it all the time. It's helpful to practice. Second, approach the situation from a place of curiosity. You know, one thing that you can think about saying when you're crafting your approach, when you're practicing, is to try this. You could say something like, I was wondering whether I could talk with you about a concern that I have. It's important, the way that you use your words, concern rather than a problem. Problem can immediately put a person sort of on the defensive. Oh my goodness, it's a problem. Concern has a different connotation. So I prefer to use the word concern, okay? I was wondering whether I could talk with you about a concern that I have. I've been working through it, and I think I'd like to work with you on how to approach it. I think I know how I'd like to work through it, but I'd appreciate your input. So this is important because it tells the person that you're not just coming to dump something on their problem. You're not just dropping the burden on their lap. When you just drop the problem on their lap, then you become the problem in their eyes, and you're really trying to avoid that. Instead, you're asking for your supervisor's expertise in resolving an issue that you are taking responsibility for. Now, everybody has a little bit of ego, at least, and most people like to be thought of as experts or authorities in one way or another. So you can use that here to shape your supervisor's perspective. You are asking your supervisor to collaborate in a problem-solving process. And that's why I call this process collaborative self-advocacy. You're asking them to collaborate on something that you're already working on, trying to get a solution for, and you'd like their input on how to solve the problem. Third, understand that getting your supervisor to understand that you are inviting him or her to be collaborative might take some time. You might have tried this approach a few times, or you might have to try this approach a few times, right? Especially if your relationship up to this point has been contentious. You might have to work on it over time. It takes time to build up goodwill. If you're just starting off the job, get off on the right foot by trying this approach from the get-go. Otherwise, do understand that as with most holistic approaches to problem solving, this one might take a little while to catch on. And then finally, do be prepared with your BATNA. And this is a term that is commonly used in the negotiation and mediation world. Your BATNA is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. You can't make your supervisor feel comfortable with this approach. That ultimately is their decision. You can try this approach with a sincere heart and an open mind, and that usually goes a long way toward winning someone over. Ultimately, their response to your overtures is entirely up to them. So you can't control how they react to this. You can only try. So you make sure to use your PIN, your position, your interest and need, and know that you understand that. And then also be sure to have your plan B and plan C. Use your PIN to decide what your plan B is and what your plan C is if necessary. And that is how you make sure that you are prepared with a BATNA, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. Okay? So to summarize, first, Be prepared. Know your facts and know your PIN. Try to anticipate your supervisor's PIN. Second, use a collaborative approach. Set a collaborative tone by coming from a place of curiosity. Third, be patient. Establishing goodwill might take some time. And fourth, finally, be realistic. Have your BATNR ready in case your supervisor chooses not to accept your offer to collaborate. Now, I've condensed quite a bit of information into a brief review right here. So, as I've said before, learning how to be a good negotiator and dispute resolver works best when you have a practice, when you have a chance to practice or to observe, right? So I can give you this information. I can condense it for you. We're, you know, on the radio. I'm not going to sit here and lecture you for an hour like might happen if you were to be taking this class at the university level, which is where I might teach something like this, or in a two-hour workshop. I might spend 2 hours on what I've just condensed down for you. But in this format, it's really great if you have a chance to practice or observe. So this is your chance to call in with your concerns and your questions. And don't be shy. The call-in number is 818-532-9789. And it won't hurt, I promise. Go ahead and call. And we're also going to talk about the question of the week and continue with our quiz from last week. Do you remember that? And the quiz is about whether you would be a good partner, a good husband or wife, a good spouse in the 1930s. So we're going to go back to that and see how you score. Last week we did the husbands, and I'm going to briefly review that for people who are new to the show. And then we're also going to talk about the wives. What would make a good wife in the 1930s? But first, we're going to take another quick break and hear from Payang's Fred Gill. And this is a song called Propeller. And it is from her second release called Portholes to a Love and Other Short Stories. If you're on the website for the show, www.blogtalkradio.com/batabile. And if you need to know how to spell that, you can find that on Facebook. Or if you found the show, you actually kind of know how to spell it if you're listening to the show. But you'll see there a link to Amazon.com where you can purchase a copy of her prior release, Payang's prior release. It's called Of the Air. This present release called Portholes to a Love and Other Short Stories is available on iTunes. You'll also see up there a link to an artist that we featured last week. That's Loida George. And Loida Life from Bohemian Caverns is also available on Amazon.com. So if you liked the music you heard last week, there's an opportunity for you to purchase it. It's also available on iTunes as well. Okay, so we're going to be back in just a minute. You're going to hear from Payang for now, and I'll see you after the break. The song is called Lost Continent. Catches of something familiar.
I thought my last. If my profile's all that you see, then you clearly miss the picture. My imagination's dwindling in this illusion of plenty. My name's no fame or fortune, quite ordinary. The dream.
Hello, everyone. We are back with our show here. This is Batavi Lemtompany. I'm the mediator and your conflict coach. And if you're just joining in, I am broadcasting live from Harlem, USA. You are listening to Untangled Resolution's weekly broadcast of The Problem is the Answer, a show about relationships and communication. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in relationship mediation and conflict coaching. Relationship mediation is like feng shui for your relationships. For more information, visit me on the web at www.123untangled.com. And I want to let you guys know how much fun I've been having this week. I've been going to hear the artists who are performing as part of the Lady Got Chops Women's Month Music and Arts Festival. Now, I can hear you all groaning if you've been listening to the show the last couple of weeks. You're all saying, oh no, she's going to read that list again. I have heard your anguish. I have learned the error of my ways. I won't read the list, but I do want to urge you to visit the festival's website for information about dates. And you can go to www.kimclark.8m.com/ladyfest9.html. And don't worry, I'm going to be putting that link up in the chat room in a minute so that you can click on it and go straight to the website for information about the show's dates. And this is a great way to support women in music and have a great time doing it. I'm putting together a video from the shows that I've attended, and I will have a link for you next week so that you can get a sample of what's been going on. You really don't want to miss these shows. That is www.kimclark, and Clark is spelled with an E at the end, 8m.com/ladyfest9.html. And you also were listening to Payang Threadgill, another independent artist whom I really enjoy hearing from. If you'd like to hear her live, she'll be performing on March 11th at 7:30 p.m. at the Brooklyn Zen Center in Brooklyn, of course, and again on March 25th at 9 p.m. at the Rockwood Music Hall. For more about her and her music and the dates she'll be playing, visit her on MySpace. That's www.myspace.com/Payang, and it's spelled P-Y-E-N-G. Now, if I've been mispronouncing that, girl, I am so sorry. It's what I was told is how to pronounce it. I will check in with you to make sure. But www.myspace.com/Payang, and I'll put that up in the chat room as well so that you can get it. So support independent music and listen to the shows, go and support live music. All right, so I have a caller, and I'm going to go ahead and take this call. This is somebody from the 347 area code. I'm not going to ask who you are, so that you can remain anonymous if you want to, and if you don't mind saying what your name is, you're free to do that as well. But this is a caller from the 347 area code. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just joined in. This is my first time calling in, and I'm calling in to see what's going on with your show, and I enjoyed that last song.
Well, thank you so much. Welcome to the show, first of all. I'm glad that you have joined in. How did you hear about the show?
Through Facebook.
Ah, of course, the power of Facebook. Well, thank you so much, and I'm glad that you enjoyed the last song, this Payang Threadgill.
Yes.
Very good. Do you have a question or a comment?
No, I don't, because I listen to the music, I enjoy the music, and I know you say your show was about relationships, right?
It is about relationships and communication. So, you know, that's why we had that part in the show where I was talking about negotiating with power. You know, that's my way of giving information to folks that I hope will be helpful if they have to, let's say, negotiate with their boss or their supervisor or something like that.
Oh, okay. I called in a little late. I should have called in at the beginning and listened to the whole program. But next Sunday I will call in and I will hear the whole program.
Well, I appreciate that, and no worries about, you know, when you joined. You have the information now, and I'm glad that you've come on board.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you're very welcome. Hang on and listen to the rest of the show, all right?
All right.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. So we are ready to go to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, they're fighting. Should I get involved? So someone emailed me a question about two friends of theirs who are romantically involved, and they are talking about moving in together. They haven't actually moved in yet, but rent has become an issue. The issue of how are they going to share their expenses. So one of the friends asked for advice from the person who wrote to me, and the person who wrote to me wanted to know whether she should get involved. She also wanted to know whether it mattered that the two people, the couple who were having a disagreement about the rent, were women. Does it matter if it's a same-sex couple? So should you get involved when your friends are fighting? If it's a married couple, let's say, or people who are otherwise romantically involved? What do you think? Go ahead and call in, and let's get talking. Just one technical issue to address. When you call in, be sure to turn down the sound on your computer so that you don't have an echo. And also, please remember that this is a family show. We don't shy away from tough problems, but please be aware of your language, all right? So you can call in for a number of reasons, actually. You can call in to address the question of the day or the question of the week, which is, should I get involved when they're fighting? You can also call in to ask questions about the topic of the week, which is about negotiating with power. You know, maybe you are preparing to have a conversation with somebody who has who's in a position of power, and you need to negotiate with that person. So you can call in about that too, or you can call in about any kind of issue that you might be having, a dispute that you're having with a friend or a family member, and I'd be happy to work with you to talk about how to approach resolving those issues from a collaborative perspective. Okay, so while we're getting ready for people to call in, yes, let me go ahead and give the call-in number. It is 818-532-9789. That's 818-532-9789. For those of you who have Skype, if you're on the website, if you're on the page there for the web, you'll see a little button that says click to talk. It doesn't immediately put you on the air. It allows you to get into the queue, and if you want to be put on the air, then you can go ahead and it'll give you the direction for how to do that so that I know that you want to be on the air. Otherwise, it's another way of listening to the show and also calling in. You can use Skype. All right. So last week, we were talking about what it takes to be a marriage partner in the 1930s. Could you have been a good spouse in the 1930s? We're going to go back to the quiz, and we're going to start again with the husband's chart, okay? And I promise today we're going to go through the whole thing so that we have a chance for everybody to add up their scores and call in and talk about your score. If you're concerned about your score, what does it mean, okay? So we're going to start with the merits. The good stuff. What makes you a good husband? Number one, gives wife ample allowance or turns paycheck over to her. If you do that, give yourself an extra 5 points. So each one of these merits is usually worth one. Some of them are worth five, and this is one of them. If you're courteous to your wife's friends, give yourself 1 point. If you frequently compliment your wife about her looks, her cooking, her housekeeping, give yourself 5 points. If you remember birthdays and anniversaries and so forth, give yourself 5 points. If you help your wife with the dishes, with caring for the kids, with scrubbing, other chores like that, give yourself 1 point. If you're polite and mannerly, even when you're alone with your wife, give yourself 1 point. If you consult your wife's opinion about business and social affairs, 1 point. If you have a date with your wife at least once a week, 5 points per date. So if you go out more than once a week with your wife, that's 5 points each time. If you read the newspaper or books or magazines out loud to your wife, that's 1 point. If you're a good conversationalist, 1 point. If you're a steady worker and a good provider, 5 points. And if you leave the car for your wife on the days that she might need it, 1 point. Okay? So go ahead, add all of those up. Those are your merits. Now we get to the demerits. Stuff we don't want to see in a husband. Number one, do you stare at or flirt with other women while you're out with your wife? That's 5 points. Do you read the newspaper at the table? Like I mentioned last week, in this day and age, it's texting. Do you text while you're at the table? That's 1 point. Do you fail to come to the table promptly when the meal is ready? That's 1 point. Do you bring guests home for meals without warning your wife? That's 1 point. Do you fail to phone in when you're going to be late for dinner? That's 1 point. Do you compare your wife unfavorably with your mother or other wives? That's 5 points. Do you publicly praise your bachelor days and regret having married? That's 1 point. I personally think it should be 5, but they just give 1 point to that one. Do you criticize your wife in public? That's 5 points. Do you belch without apology or blow your nose at the table? Ooh, that's 1 point. Do you leave the dresser drawers open? 1 point. Do you leave your shoes in the living room? 1 point. I know somebody who's really a stickler about the shoes being left all over the house. I think this person knows who I'm talking about. And then finally, do you snore? That's 1 point. Okay, so those are the demerits and the merits. Add up the demerits, add up the merits, and then subtract the demerits from the merits, and that gives you your score. You want to have as high a score as possible, okay? Over 76 means that you're superior. Over superior, very superior. 59 to 75 means that you're superior. 42 to 58 means that you're average. 25 to 41 is poor. And if your score is between 0 and 24, you're a failure. And I'm not the one who's saying that. That's what the chart says. It says very poor, failures. Okay. So you want to make sure that your score is at least above 24. All right, let's get to the wives. I'm sure all the men out there are eagerly listening, waiting to hear what's going on with the wives. Let's hear the merits for the wives. Okay, so for the wives, if you're a good hostess, even to unexpected guests, 1 point. If you have meals ready on time, 1 point. If you can carry on an interesting conversation, 1 point. Can you play a musical instrument, like the piano or the violin? That's 1 point. Do you dress for breakfast? No curlers, no, you know, raggedy bathrobe. You get dressed up for breakfast. That's 1 point. Are you a neat housekeeper? Are you tidy and clean? That's 1 point. Do you personally put your children to bed? 1 point. Do you never go to bed early, angry, I'm sorry. Do you never go to bed angry, but always make up first? That's 5 points. Do you ask your husband's opinion regarding important decisions and purchases? That's 1 point. Do you have a good sense of humor? Are you jolly and gay? Remember, this was written in the 1930s, right? So are you usually in a good mood? That's 1 point. Are you religious? Do you send the children to church or Sunday school? And do you go yourself? That's 10 points. At the same time, and I think this one's funny, do you let your husband sleep late on Sunday and holidays? That's 1 point. All right, so those are the merits. Those are the good attributes. Now we're going to go to the demerits. What was considered to be negative about a wife back in the 30s? Number one, are you slow in coming to bed? Do you delay until your husband is almost asleep? Wonder what's going on with that one. That's 1 point. If you don't like children, 5 points. If you fail to sew on buttons or darn your husband's socks regularly, that's 1 point. If you wear a soiled or ragged dress and apron around the house, that's 1 point. If you wear red nail polish, that's 1 point. If you are often late for appointments, give yourself 5 points. If the seams in your hose are crooked, we might have to explain that one, you know, because hose, meaning like, you know, stockings or nylons, used to be made differently. They all had the seam up the back. So if the seam up the back of your hose is often crooked, that's 1 point. Interesting what was important back in that day, in the day, right? The seams in your hose, that was important. If you go to bed with curlers in your hair or too much face cream on your face, that's 1 point. If you put your cold feet on your husband at night to warm them up, that's 1 point. If you are a backseat driver, that is 1 point. If you flirt with other men at parties or in restaurants, that is 5 points. And if you are suspicious and jealous, give yourself 5 points. Okay, so again, you're going to add up your merits. You're going to add up the demerits. And we can talk a bit about what the raw scores are. Again, you want to be 76 and over. You want to have at least 76 points. Oh, actually, you know what? I take it back. We're going to have to redo the scoring on this because I've just noticed something. I've just noticed that it looks like the scale has been cut off. They only give us the first 12 questions on each side. They don't give us all of them. I wonder how many questions there were in the whole quiz. Because, you know, somebody called in last week and they said they got 13 points. And I know this person. And I thought, you know what? It can't be that bad. They said they got 13 points. So go ahead and add up your scores, and then we're going to try to figure out how to get that out of 12. But even if you don't finally get your score, it's interesting to note what people considered to be important back in the 1930s when it was time to look at what makes a good spouse, isn't it? Red nail polish? My goodness. All right, I'm going to go over the chat room and see what's going on in the chat room. Okay, so somebody asked, well, what if they're both atheists? I guess this is about the question going to church, if you send your kids to church on Sunday. That's interesting, isn't it? There still seems to have been an expectation that you're going to send the kids to church and that the wives were expected to go to church and let their husbands stay home on Sunday and sleep in a bit. That's interesting. Okay. And there's somebody who is asking about the question of the day. Is it in a scenario where one of them has invited you to get involved or just a situation where you see an area or see an issue you feel needs to be addressed? You know, that's a great question. If this is a scenario where one of them has invited you to be involved, and that actually was one of the first things that I picked up on because I went ahead and I talked with this person about the issue. And the truth is that, yes, one person had reached out to her and asked for her opinion. That's important. That's an important thing. If just one person comes to you for your opinion, now you're going to start stepping into an area that can be dangerous for you. Because the question is, what's going on with the other person? Why haven't they come to you for your advice? Do they want your advice as well? So in a situation like that, it's important to think about who is coming to ask me for my opinion and why are they coming to me? What are they expecting to get? Are they looking for backup? Are they looking for you to be backup for their position? Or are they actually asking for your opinion because they value your opinion and they want to hear from you about how they should proceed in the situation? So that's an important distinction to make. Okay, chat room. Any more questions about that particular issue? Because before I get into how I approach the issue, I really want to hear from you. So go ahead and call in. Let me know what you're thinking about this situation. But let me add this bit of thought about that situation, because there's some lessons to be taken from people who get involved in situations involving couples all the time, and that's the police. And the police know that one of the more dangerous places to be during your shift, one of the most dangerous things to do is to respond to a domestic call. And here's the reason why. You respond to a domestic call, you come in, the couple is fighting, let's say you move to arrest one person. There's a funny thing that happens, and it happens pretty regularly. The other person objects. Because even if they are mad at that person, when you are on the team with somebody, you might be mad at your teammate, but dare somebody else come in and interfere, and all of a sudden your priorities shift. So what do they say? Don't touch them. Get your hands off my wife. Or get your hands off my husband. Or get your hands off my partner, whatever the case might be. Okay, so that is a threesome you just don't want to get involved in. You want to stay away from getting in the middle of people who are fighting. So you've been invited to get in the middle of people who are fighting. And the question again is, you know, was it one person who asked you or is it the other person? So when I was dealing with that particular issue, one of the things that I suggested was that the person find out why is it that only one person had asked them for their advice. And I suggested that if they really wanted to go ahead and ask or get involved and give their advice, that it's important to get the other person on board. So I suggested that they say to the person who came to them that they would be willing to give their opinion, but that they wanted the other person to be involved as well. So if you have a situation where it's a couple and one of them comes to you and wants advice, I think conventional wisdom is going to say, try to back off. But if you think you can be helpful, be sure to make sure you have buy-in from the other person. And somebody in the chat room has said, yes, can you really give effective advice not having heard from both parties? Excellent observation. That's an excellent observation. That's true. Because you're only hearing from one person. So you only are having one perspective when you've only heard from one person. And in mediation, part of the reason why it works so well is that the perspectives of the people who are involved come out in the same room, in the same context. The mediator has a chance to hear from everybody who's involved and who's involved in the mediation. So when you have just one person talking to you, it's a different kind of skill to talk with them. And it is better if you have both of the people involved or all of the people involved if it's a group issue. Now, it is possible, actually, to talk with just one person. It takes a different kind of skill, and that's called conflict coaching. And that's part of what I do as well. So I'm a mediator and a conflict coach. And the difference between mediation and conflict coaching, to simplify it, is that in conflict coaching, I work with just one person. If perhaps they haven't reached a point where they're able to reach out to another person, they don't feel comfortable talking to the other person, or even if the other person has decided that mediation is not for them, but the person who has come to me still feels that they might receive benefit from working with somebody to help them address the conflict and learn conflict resolution skills. So I will work with one person, but in that situation, it's not for me to necessarily give them advice about how to resolve the issue. It is about giving them tools, tools that help them to understand the issue more broadly and that help them to address the issue with the other person by having skills in communication. And you've heard a lot of those skills, active listening and collaborative self-advocacy. That's what that's all about. And so I will work with a person so that they can learn these skills and take them back to the other person and have a conversation that is productive and a problem-solving conversation rather than an argument. So that's what conflict coaching is all about. So it is possible to work with just one person. But, again, it takes a special kind of skill, I think. It takes a specific kind of training. You know, it's taken me 7 years to reach the place where I am in my development in working with one person at a time. And so in this situation where people are in an argument, especially when they are romantically involved and they want to ask for your advice or one person has asked for your advice, my suggestion is tread carefully, but if you decide to tread with both of them and make sure that both of them are listening to you or are involved in the conversation. All right. So I'm going to take another minute. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and you're going to hear some more from Payang Threadgill. This is a song called Archives of the Sky. Again, it is from her latest release called Portals to a Love and Other Short Stories, which is available on iTunes. Payang Threadgill. Tabitha Mtombeni with Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer. If you're just joining us, I am broadcasting live from Harlem, USA. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in mediation and conflict resolution. Relationship mediation is like feng shui for your relationships, so give us a try, www.123untangled.com or info@123untangled.com if you'd prefer email. Feel free to get in touch. All right, so we're back from our break. You've been listening to Paiang Threadgill, and the song that you just heard was called Archives of the Sky. It is from her latest release called Portals to a Love and Other Short Stories, which is available on iTunes. Paiang will be performing in the city of New York on March 11th at the Brooklyn Zen Center, and then again, and that's at 7:30 p.m. at the Brooklyn Zen Center, and then again on March 25th at Rockwood Music Hall at 9 p.m. So I really encourage you to support live music, support independent artists, and give her a listen, buy her CD. And also there's the Lady Got Chops Women's Month Music and Arts Festival. And we've given you the information about the website to go to that. I'm going to put that up in the chat room for you before the show's over so that you have a chance to go. I've had so much fun this last week attending the gigs, and I'm sure you will as well. All right, so we've been talking about our topic of the week, which is negotiating with power, how to negotiate with somebody who has a position of power over you. And then we're also talking about our question of the week, which is, they're fighting, should I get involved? What happens when you have friends who are romantic partners who are involved in an argument and one of them asks you for your advice? Okay, we've got a caller on the line, and I think they're coming in from Skype. So I'm going to go ahead and put you on. Hello, this is Batavile. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Welcome to the show.
Great. You know, I just wanted to make a quick comment on this topic. I just think, you know, a lot of times people, it's easy to get involved, and everyone has, you know, an opinion and input, and especially when it's a friend or someone you know, you may think they're helping. But I think a lot of times people aren't as judicious as perhaps they need to be when deciding when to get involved, and can actually end up being more to harm the relationship than to build it up. Because, you know, for instance, your tendency, you know, you have to be aware you know, your own biases, and your tendency is obviously going to be towards your friend or loved one. And so only hearing, you know, essentially what you're hearing is that the person is suffering, and, you know, that gets you, that might get you riled up, you want to be that person's teammate. And so the person may walk away feeling, you know, just really empowered about their position, or more empowered about the fact that their spouse or loved one is wrong, but really without having made any progress. So I think we have to really be honest with ourselves. Are we in a position to help or not?
So your concern with getting involved would be that the person is biased, that you, you know, if one of the people is your friend and you're closer to them than you are to the other person who is part of this couple, that you end up doing more harm than good by getting involved because your bias will show unless you are honest with yourself and really investigate your own biases.
Exactly. Right. And I think I want to speak back on the ideas that you were saying earlier, in that, you know, it's really just a trained individual to counsel one party out of a couple or a team effectively, you know, only having heard their, you know, their version of the events or what have you, and to, you know, not be involved, especially if you have some type of relationship or history with that person. It's
right.
A very difficult thing to do.
Right. Well, that's a great observation. That's a terrific observation, and thank you for your observation. I'm going to go ahead and take another caller and see what they have to say. This is somebody calling from the 917 area code. Caller, you're on the air, 917.
Hi, Pastor Belly.
Hello. How are you?
Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Yeah, first of all, I want to call you and tell you it's just a great show that you have. It's a great forum for speaking. This is Ian, by the way. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Ian. Welcome to the show. And I have to tell folks, Ian is a wonderful friend of the show. He's done so much in getting the word out about the show. So I want to say a public thank you to you for all that you've done for the show.
Yeah, and I'm actually in my car listening on my Bluetooth, as I told you I was going to try and do earlier. But I kind of lost some of the show in transition from the house to the car. So bring me up to speed.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I kind of lost some of the show in transition from the house to the car. So I kind of lost where we are in the discussion.
Okay, so we were talking about the question of the week, which is, you know, should you get involved when you've got two friends who are romantically involved and they're having a fight?
Oh, wow, should you get involved? Wow, that's wow. You know, the thing about getting involved is it's going to always be a biased situation. Even if you know the friend, you know, there's always two sides to the story. And a lot of times you get involved and then, I think you mentioned this earlier, the other party, the accusing party, or the beginning accusing party, will kind of get defensive when you start to take sides.
Mm.
They're like, well, you know, I got to you get involved and, you know, you give your opinion on the situation. Then all of a sudden, you know, they kind of stand back. It's like, they've been, okay, how long have you been noticing this? Or why didn't you tell me that before?
Mm.
Or then it can go the opposite way. They can always say, well, you know, who are you to say, who are you to judge him or her,
mm.
you know? So you kind of get caught in the middle. You want to say something, but sometimes when you do say something, you get chastised. If you don't say something, it's like, why didn't you say something? So.
So in a sense, you become the enemy, and it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't, exactly.
Wow, okay. All right, great insight on that. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, that's it right now. And I just want to say, you know, you have a great show and just keep up the good work, and I'll be listening.
Well, thank you so much, Ian. Good to talk with you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so there you have it. You've got two people on the line who've said consistently, watch out. Watch out about getting involved because you could find yourself on the receiving end of all the anger and whatever it is that's going on, right? Okay, so we have another caller here on the air. Let's see if we have a different opinion. 909 area code, you are on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, you're very welcome, and welcome to the show.
Thanks. You know what? I don't know if it was the guys who were speaking before, but I totally think you should get involved. I mean, it's your friend, right? That's what friends are for.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about that. What would you do?
Well, I would listen to what my friend had to say. I mean, I have to imagine that they're coming to me for advice because they trust me and, you know, they have gained a rapport with me, and they obviously think that I can maybe shed some light on their situation that they weren't able to see. So I would listen to what they had to say and then give my honest opinion.
Okay. And what happens if people start getting defensive? You know, that's something that the last two callers have pointed out, that you could find yourself suddenly, you know, being the enemy.
Well, I don't think so. I think that, you know, it just depends on how you interpret what's going on, because if you know, if you tell them what you think and then they start getting defensive, then you could just, you know, let it go at that and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. I guess, you know, that's just my personal opinion, but you can just take it for what it is. You know, it's still up to you whatever you're going to do.
Okay, okay. I mean, you'd hope that people are that open-minded. Is there a situation that you can recall where you were successful in doing this?
Well, my friends often ask me for advice. Oh, I do actually have one recent one with a friend of mine who is having some problems with her husband. And, you know, I gave her some advice on how she might rather approach the topic that they were discussing. And she decided to try it, and it worked. So, you know, I mean, sometimes you can't really see what to do in your own personal situation, and that's why we have friends, so that, you know, when we're at a loss, the people whose judgment we trust, you know, can shed some light on our situation.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's interesting that what you said was that you didn't necessarily give her advice on the issue, but you gave her advice on how to talk about the issue. And I wonder if that is something that makes a difference. You know, what I want to do is I want to bring back in a caller who perhaps has a different thought on this, and maybe now there is something different that they want to say, or maybe they've changed their answer. So I'm going to go back to the caller who seems to be Skyping in. There's a letter A here. So I don't have an area code, but I want to go back to you and bring you back in. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, you caught me with my mouth full, but I'm still here.
Oh, I caught you off guard there. Yes, you've got to be prepared. You never know. go ahead and let me know. I mean, now we've heard from somebody who thinks that they would get involved. What are you thinking now?
I'm not saying that you never should get involved, just that you should be very careful in doing it. And I like the approach of that caller in the sense of coaching on how to approach a situation. And I think that's very wise because most of us want to give input on what to do in the situation, what to say, what to command. And I think that's probably overstepping boundaries. I think the only time when that's might be appropriate if somebody's in danger, kids are in danger, you know, something of that nature. But I really like the idea of commenting on how to approach the situation, what ideas we can do to come to the city.
So being aware of the context is really important, you're saying, because if, like you mentioned, if it's a person who's in danger, maybe it's a different thing. You know, you're not just having a conversation about how to have a conversation, but you really want to give advice to this person because you're concerned about their safety.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, I would give advice on specifically what was going on. I mean, you know, I'm their friend, and that's obviously why they're coming to me. So, I mean, even if it wasn't just on how to approach the topic, even if they were asking something specific, like who do I think is right or wrong in a situation, I would give my honest opinion, you know. I mean, obviously, that's what, you know, they respect my thoughts. That's why they came to me in the first place.
Okay, so we've got two opinions going here, and I've got another caller coming in. So for the two of you who have just been speaking, I'm going to leave your microphones open. You'll be able to chime in. But let's hear, there's somebody else from the 917 area code, or I'm not sure if it's Ian again. I don't remember the phone number. But I'm going to put you back on the air. 917 area code, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi, yeah, you can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, I didn't chime in, but I didn't press the one, but I...
Hello? Okay, we've lost the call. It looks as though this person was not expecting to be on the line. We're still kind of working out the technical issues here with how Blog Talk Radio works. It's actually a pretty simple platform to use usually, but in this instance, it looks like they may have put themselves in the queue when they didn't intend to, and that's fine. But we are back to the two folks that we had on the line, and we do have differing opinions. So on the one hand, you have a caller who is saying that, you know, it's probably better not to give advice about the subject matter of the call, but to perhaps you could talk with them about communication skills instead and not be talking with them about the actual issues because you're likely to be biased.
So okay. I have a question, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my question to the other caller is, you know, what if the person tells you what their problem is, you know, like they say, well, my spouse has taken up drinking and I don't want them to be drinking, but they feel like they're an adult and they can drink if they want to and it wasn't something they did before. What do you think I should do? You know, that's some... Wouldn't you want to give them your ideas of what they could do in a situation like that? I mean, that's your friend. You just leave them to try and sink or swim by themselves?
Yeah, that's a good scenario. And I think what I would shy away from is things like saying, oh, you know, that's unacceptable and you should never let that happen. And you know, you need to go to tell them this, 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 and the other. But I think what might be appropriate is, you know, you need to find out why this new behavior, you know, where did this come from, and, you know, sit down and talk it through and see what they say. You know, anything I think that encourages the two people who are the couple to learn how to solve their own problems and address their problems and become a unit, become a team like that, and be better friends is good. And anything that, you know, just, you know, entrenches people into, are you on my side or you're on their side, and it becomes good. To include more people, you know, to my, you know, to my army, and because we're having this battle, I think those things are ultimately bad.
Yeah, but like, what if it's already gone to a point where now their drinking is disruptive in the house, and your friend doesn't feel like it's a situation they want to live in, and they're asking you, you know, I think I should move out. What do you think? You know, and you can assess the situation. You can see, like, what this person's behavior is doing. They've already tried to talk to them, and they're not listening. What are you going to do? You're going to, like, not tell them, yeah, I think you should move out. Or you're going to just, you know, leave them to wonder on their own. Sometimes people need to know that other people would behave similarly to give them the strength to be able to make the right move.
Right, but the thing is that you're not in that situation. You don't know the other side. You know, unless you thought that they were in imminent danger, you really are assuming a lot of things that you don't know for sure because you're not that person, not in the situation. And I think the best thing that we can do for our friends in that situation is to steer both of them towards professional help and. You know, if the problem is getting that serious. I think it's a mistake, though, to...
Wait, I'm going to let you go ahead and finish your sentence, but you've just brought up something that I was about to address. But, yes, go ahead and finish.
No, I think it's a mistake to think that we know enough about the situation, having just heard from one party, to make good, effective decisions on what the person is.
You know, you just started to bring up something about suggesting professional help. It's an interesting thing to me. I think people are used to going to therapy, let's say, for marital issues or for relationship issues and families and so forth. And yet there's another avenue that's available to them, which is mediation. And it can be used in situations where the issue is not necessarily all-encompassing, where the issue is concerned, where perhaps you want something that's shorter term. You know, the idea with therapy is that you go for an extended period of time. With mediation, you actually sit down and you focus on problem solving. Is that something that either of you have experienced, or what does it say to you that, you know, mediation is available as an option?
Yeah, in all honesty, I actually had a situation once where I was friends with two people, and they had had a prior relationship that had ended, but they were, you know, one of them, the lady was very unhappy with the way things had turned out, and the man, and she was accusing the guy of being totally unfair in the situation, and the guy wanted to defend himself, and they asked me to mediate. And I tried to tell them that I know nothing about mediation, but they talked me into it, and it was a really horrible experience for me. And in that situation, I do truly wish that I could have referred them to a professional mediator, because once I was sitting there and, you know, sitting in between them, I realized that it would have been very helpful for someone who knew what they were doing to help them, because it seemed like they could have gotten help, but in all honesty, I was more friends with the lady, and I was on her side, so it kind of didn't go anywhere good.
right. I'm going to skip over to the chat room for a second and see what's going on over there and what people are thinking. So most of the time, there's the Scuba Cuda, that's nice, I like that. Scuba Cuda says, most of the time, friends, quote-unquote, make the situation worse by not referring someone in trouble to a professional counselor, in my opinion. And Ishtar 23 says the most you should do is listen. And, you know, even that can be helpful. Now, Skipper Kuda came back and said, I suppose most of the time you can't fix people's problem. You can't fix people's problems, and listening just lets them spin their wheels indefinitely. You know what? I'm going to jump in on that particular response there and say that, you know, it may seem that just sitting and listening allows people to spin their wheels indefinitely. And yes, if you've sat and listened to somebody who has a problem and is mulling it over, you might hear them repeating the same thing over and over and over again. And it just gets really difficult to be a good friend and be there for them because you're just, you know, going crazy listening to them say the same thing over and over again. But here are a couple of things that I think might be helpful in that situation. One is to realize that a lot of times just allowing a person to talk something through and being there as a listener can help them arrive at the problem, or I'm sorry, at the solution, can help them identify the problem and arrive at a solution. The other thing is that this is a chance for you to put what you've learned about active listening into good use. Sometimes it helps for a person to be able to hear themselves, to hear what they are saying and what they sound like, and then the answer becomes clear to them. So you can use paraphrasing and reframing those skills. You can use them in a situation like that where you're not trying to offer advice, but you are acting as a sounding board for somebody who has a dilemma. And so you simply listen to what they say and then identify their position, their interests, and their needs. All the stuff that we've been talking about, you can use that in this situation. Identify their positions, their interests, and needs, and say to them what you're hearing. Well, what I'm hearing you say is that you want such and such. And what I'm hearing you say is you want that because of this thing or the other thing. And what I'm hearing you say is that you really need for such and such to happen. And you can go through a loop. You know, it's not a circle, it's a spiral. That's what I try to tell people. This is not a circular process, it's a spiral. You may find yourself coming back to the same things, but there's always movement each time you come back to it. And eventually, you might find that your friend suddenly says, oh my goodness, why didn't I think of that? This is what the solution to my problem has been the whole time. So sometimes just listening and doing the active listening parts of paraphrasing and reframing can be helpful so that you don't have to get involved by getting in the middle, by giving your opinion, which, as a couple of people have pointed out, could be biased because you really don't know the situation. But rather, you can be a good friend by using the skills of active listening that you have learned by listening to Untangled Resolutions and listening to The Problem is the Answer. And you can use those skills to help your friend talk through the issue and come to the resolution on their own. Okay, so that's really great. What are you guys thinking about that?
Yeah, I think that that really could be a very good idea. Well, actually, to be honest with you, after I remembered that other friend, I'm kind of feeling like I think it would be a better idea to refer them to professional mediation than try and handle it myself.
All right. Well, mediators are always there to help. I want to hear from the other caller. What's going on for you?
I think Scuba put it, made a good clean point, and that is most of the time people know what the right thing to do is. And so what I think as friends, what we can best do is be there, listen. Oftentimes that's really what they want anyway. I don't want to get too deep into gender differences, but I think you'll notice that our women friends probably appreciate that a little bit more. Our guy friends kind of want to get the answer to the solution. But I think the best thing to do for them is to listen. And if it's a problem that they seem to be at an impasse at, try to refer them to professional help.
Right. Well, and you're right. There may be differences in gender that impact how a person might approach the situation. Women do tend to sit together and talk through their issues a lot. I mean, I've heard this from guys as well. Yeah, I'll talk about everything. You know, nothing's left to imagination. Girlfriends get together and talk about everything. And so, yes, for men, the preference might be different. And I think with men, it might be more of an attitude of where they'll just sit and listen, or maybe not even really talk things through. You know, there's this tendency that is, I think, culturally imposed for men to keep things to themselves and sort of stoically suffer through whatever bothers them. And there is room for balance on either end. There is a problem of sharing too much, especially if you're in an intimate relationship. You should be careful who you share your business with and how much of your business you share. At the same time, reaching out for help is important. As I said earlier in the show, we all live in community, and everybody can be a resource to everybody else if you are doing so from a place of genuine concern and open-mindedness. So it's important to reach out for help. It's important at the same time to temper that and make sure that you are respecting your partner by not bringing other people into your relationship in a way that's inappropriate. So I'm really glad to the folks who've called in. This has been an interesting topic, and I appreciate your input on that. We're going to turn a little bit to what we're going to talk about next week. And, you know, there was an interesting case that came up this last week that came to my attention through Facebook. Facebook is so fantastic for that. Somebody posted a story about a custody dispute. These parents had been fighting regarding custody of their child for 10 years. You know, when people get divorced, it can take time to get divorced. New York State has just recently instituted a no-fault divorce law. And so it is, I think, perhaps the last state to do that. So just about everywhere in the United States, it's no-fault divorce. And so getting a divorce now can be relatively quick. You know, before that time, you might have had a trial, and it would have taken 2 to 3 years, and it got really involved. Now it can be done, if you decide to go to court, it can be done in a matter of months. And if you go to mediation, I'm going to put out another plug for mediation there. If you go to mediation, it can be done in about 12 weeks or 12 sessions. And you get to decide how often you want to come in, how long it's going to take. You know, a lot of that is in your hands. Mediation really is about putting the task of resolving the dispute into the hands of the people who I believe appropriately should be the ones who resolve the dispute, and it's the people who are going to have to live with the results. So nobody can advocate for you like you can, because nobody knows you and your needs and your interests like you do, and mediation is a chance for you to be able to get help from a trained neutral who can help you to listen to each other and to advocate with each other for your best outcomes. Well, so you had this couple that didn't go to mediation. They got divorced but stayed in litigation for 10 years because they had a disagreement about child custody. And when you have children and you're getting divorced, that often can be something that becomes a sticking point, child support and child custody issues, and they can keep couples in court litigating for years. And if you can imagine, this child now is 17 years old, so he's almost a grown-up, which means that the litigation started when he was 7. So he has spent most of his life, he spent the formative years of his life, dealing with his parents fighting over him in court, and that can't be healthy. You know, if you have children and you've decided that you need to end your marriage, or you're deciding whether to end your marriage or, you know, find another way to resolve your issues, going into litigation can be one of the ways that harms your kids immeasurably. And so another way to avoid that then is to go into mediation, where you come from a needs-based rather than a rights-based perspective. And when you go to a needs-based perspective, you avoid a lot of the harm that can happen to the children if you drag them through a litigation process. So here it is, 10 years that they had been litigating, and finally the judge came up with a resolution. The judge imposed the resolution on the family and said that the custody would go from the mom and be given to the dad. Now, the twist on that is this. It's not that it went to the dad. I know that there are folks who have feelings about the court being biased against fathers. And so in this situation, they're like, yeah, this is great. Finally, the court has seen fatherhood as being important and gave custody of the son to the father, and it's important for fathers and sons to be together. The issue in this case is that this child's father is homeless and lives in a homeless shelter, while mom earns $90,000 a year as an employee of the court system. So this is what the newspaper reported as being the situation. And I think the average person who, you know, sees the situation is really scratching their heads. How did this happen? Now the child has been given custody to the homeless father, where you would imagine that, you know, the best thing would be for the kid to be with the person who is gainfully employed and who can provide them with what we think is a proper home, you know, with shelter and all of that that's involved. So I don't know what happened in the case to cause the judge to make that decision. What is interesting to me, however, is that when you explain that this couple has been litigating for 10 years, you know that they are really angry with each other, most people seemed to think that this couldn't be mediated, that this wasn't a case that could be mediated. And my question for them was, could mediation have been any worse? And so that's the question for next week that I want you to think about. Could mediation have been any worse? Why not let people have the authority of their own destinies, decide their own destinies in a process where they're not just trying to do it by themselves, but they have guidance from a professional? Why not let that happen? So that's what we're going to talk about next week. Could mediation have been any worse? We're also going to talk next week, again, with, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking with Dominique Reese, who is a financial advisor and a financial educator. And she's writing an article for the e-zine that we put out here at Untangled Resolutions. It's called The Problem is the Answer. If you are interested in receiving the e-zine, it's really easy to sign up. Go to the website, www.123untangled.com, and you can sign up to receive the e-zine, and that way you won't miss it. This next issue coming up is the finance issue, and it recognizes that April 15th is just around the corner. It's tax season. Are you ready? So we're going to have articles about being ready to file your taxes. What do you take to your accountant? We're going to also have an article from a divorce financial analyst. And believe it or not, there are people who have that specialty where they work specifically with people who are going through divorce to work through the financial issues. And then we're also going to hear from Dominique, who is contributing an article about how to prepare your children to be good masters of their finances. You know, it's important to start early, and this article gives you a few ideas about how you can get your children involved in making good financial decisions. And then we're also going to have an article from another financial advisor who will talk about how to choose a financial advisor. So in light of all of that, I've invited Dominique to join us next week and talk with us a bit about what a financial advisor can do for you and how you can improve your financial situation. All right. I'm back in the chat room here, and I see Scuba Cuda, I'm going to have to get that straight. Scuba Cuda said, forget April 15th. That's what extensions are for. Yes, but my friend, October cometh. It still cometh. And so you have to face the music at some point. So for those who are, you know, trying to scramble and get things together for April 15th or October, if you choose to do October, be sure to join in next week and hear from our financial advisor. We're going to have other guests joining us in the future in the program. I mentioned that I'm going to ask an ombudsman to join the show. You know, we talked today about negotiating with power and what your BATNA might be, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. If you work in a workplace that has an ombudsman, your ombudsman might be your BATNA, or at least part of your BATNA. And if you're sitting there going, I don't know what's an ombudsman, oh my goodness, what is that? You'll have a chance to find out when we have our ombudsman come onto the show. So I'm so glad that you joined in today. We've had a lively conversation, and I'm glad for that. I appreciate everybody who has called into the show. Be sure to join us again next week. And in the middle of the week, give me contacts, okay? Drop me a line. I keep wanting to say give me a call, but drop me a line. You can reach out on the website. Again, it's www.123untangled.com. Or you can send me email at info@123untangled.com. All right, so we're coming down to the end of the show, and I'm going to return you to Payeng Threadgill, who's going to sing us out. And we're going to go back to hearing my favorite song. I'm going to end with it again. We started off the show with it, and so you might have missed part of it. Now you get to hear the rest of it. And it's called My Left Foot. It is from her latest release called Portholes to a Love and Other Short Stories. We will join again at 5 o'clock on Sunday, I believe it's the 13th next week, where we will talk about a brand new set of topics. And in the meanwhile, as I said, drop me a line if you have questions. I will interact with you about the questions that you have and make sure I have your permission to share these questions with folks. As always, your anonymity is my first concern, so I make sure not to give any details that would put you out there. But I'm eager to hear from you, so send me your questions and we'll talk. All right, Payeng Threadgill, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
dances a disaster.